Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
You do not want the Chinese Communist Party dictating to senior American leaders where they can and cannot travel.
Senator Dan Sullivan says he supports Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 2nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Ukrainian refugees find a new home in a former state ferry.
We've got the perfect spot for them here. We'll take care of them. And we have the perfect situation, the MV Malaspina.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Well, it's August, and you know what that means. Probably the most confusing election in Alaska history is just 2 weeks away. And early voting has already begun in the primary election and special U.S. House race. You had questions. We've got answers. We have Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin here.
Yes, I am.
Okay, Liz, am I going to get a mailed ballot? Because we were mailed ballots for the primary in this special U.S. House race. What happens in the general election for the special U.S. House race?
If you sign up for a mailed ballot, you'll get a mailed ballot, and you can still sign up until August 6. I just tried it. You can apply online. It takes about 10 minutes, and that includes the time it takes to search for your wallet and pull out your driver's license, because you need a driver's license number or a state ID number to apply online. It's very fast. Then you'll get a ballot in the mail. But no, you will not automatically be mailed a ballot.
I hear people can apply for mail ballots using a fax machine as well, which I was never good at. But if I can't make any of that stuff work, can I still vote in person?
Oh, yeah. This is primarily going to be an in-person election. And dozens of early voting sites have already opened around the state that started Monday. And on August 16, we're going to have, like, you know, an old-fashioned election where you go to your local polling place and vote. The one catch is that a lot of polling places have changed. So you'll get a mailer that says where your polling place is, or look on the Division of Election website.
That's right, because we had redistricting just recently, so people should know that their polling place may have changed.
Yes.
Okay, let's pretend like I've been living under a rock here for the last few months. What are we voting on again?
Okay, you don't have to have been living under a rock to be confused. A lot of frequent voters are confused. It's okay if you're confused. We're having our regular primary, and this time that is for virtually every election in the state and 2 out of 3 federal races. On top of that, we are having a special election for the remaining months of Congressman Don Young's term. He, of course, died in March. And we're having a special election for the remainder of his term. And then there's also the regular primary for the next term.
Right. The term that starts in January.
Yes.
Okay. I'll admit, I was kind of confused about what this was going to look like until I took a look at the sample ballot, which I would definitely recommend to folks. But there's 2 different sides to the ballot for this particular election. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we've had questions about why are we voting for U.S. House on one side of the ballot, and then you flip the ballot over and there's a short list. Okay, so we've got the regular primary, and you'll see a long list of candidates there. That is just a primary. You pick one candidate. Then you flip the ballot over and you've got the special, and it's the general in the special for the remainder, you know, for just a few months. And in the special, you have the option to rank the candidates.
Right, which will be the first time that that we're doing that. So in that special U.S. House race, do I have to rank all the candidates? What if I just vote for one person? Will my vote still count?
Absolutely. And the instructions say that you can just vote for one person. You don't have to rank. I do enjoy challenging people about ranking just because it really goes against the grain for a lot of people. And what I would say is, okay, let's say your favorite candidate loses. If there were a runoff and the two remaining candidates were the only ones on the ballot, would you vote for one? Would you participate in that runoff? If yes, then you should rank a second, or you could try it, see if you like it.
Okay, so on election night, August 16th, will we know who won the special election?
No, we won't know who ultimately has won. We will likely know who's ahead in first choice votes. But ballots postmarked by election day will continue to arrive for 15 days. And after that, the Division of Elections will, you know, start the ranked choice counting. That is, they'll determine which candidate came in third, and the ballots that went to that candidate will be reallocated according to the voter's second choice, if there is one on the ballot. And then whichever candidate of the remaining two got the most first and second choice votes will be certified as the winner. I believe the target date for that is September 2nd.
All right. Well, we have a whole lot more reporting on the upcoming elections at alaskapublic.org/elections, including ways to sign up for newsletters, including Liz's newsletter covering statewide races.
It's called Alaska at Large.
All right, Alaska at Large. That was Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin. Liz, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Casey.
A former member of the Matanuska Sioux Sitna Borough Assembly is challenging the eligibility of Representative David Eastman, a Republican from Wasilla, for state office. The Alaska Beacon reports that Randall Kowalki, aided by the civil rights law firm Northern Justice Project, filed suit in Anchorage Superior Court on Friday. The legal complaint says that Eastman's membership in the Oath Keepers Militia violates the disloyalty clause of the Alaska Constitution. Members of the Oath Keepers, including its founder, have been charged by the federal government with seditious conspiracy linked to the January 6, 2021 riots at the U.S. Capitol. Eastman attended protests in Washington, D.C. that preceded the riots, but he has not been linked to any violent actions. The lawsuit is similar to unsuccessful actions filed against state and federal lawmakers in other states, but those relied on federal law and the U.S. Constitution. The Alaska Constitution's disloyalty clause has never been cited in a court challenge here. Eastman said Monday night that he had just heard of the lawsuit and did not offer additional comment. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan doesn't usually praise Democratic leaders, but he and 25 other Republican senators issued a statement today supporting House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. Pelosi is the highest-ranking American official to visit the self-ruled island in 25 years. China sees foreign leaders' visits to Taiwan as recognition of the island's sovereignty. China claims Taiwan as part of its territory and announced a series of military operations after Pelosi's arrival. The Republican senator's statement says the U.S. is committed to its One China policy, which recognizes Beijing, but also informal relations and defense ties with Taipei. Sullivan says Pelosi's visit is consistent with that policy.
This is something that we as elected officials do on a regular basis. And at the end of the day, you do not want the Chinese Communist Party dictating to senior American leaders where they can and cannot travel.
China had warned of, quote, resolute and strong measures if Pelosi went ahead with the trip. Sullivan says it's important for U.S. officials to unite behind Pelosi on this.
My view, and I think the view of a number of senators, is that we should close ranks now and not let the Chinese Communist Party try to drive wedges between American elected officials or the White House on whether or not she should be there.
Senator Lisa Murkowski also expressed support for the visit. She calls it, quote, an important show of solidarity and partnership between the U.S. and Taiwan at a moment that demands nothing less, end quote. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the death of the Alaska Zoo's lone wolf signals the end of her pack's reign.
They were wonderful animals. I would say they were the best ambassadors of species that we've ever had here at the zoo.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
Governor Mike Dunleavy signed a package of public safety-related bills into law last week, including a measure that updates Alaska's definition of sexual assault. The Alaska Beacon reports the change had been sought for years by victims' advocates and allows the state to prosecute someone for sexual assault even if the victim freezes and doesn't verbally say no. Pre-existing law said only that an assault took place without consent if someone was threatened by force. Victim advocate Lisa Ilana of Nome said the change was long overdue and one of the most important steps the state of Alaska has taken to protect victims. Other parts of House Bill 325 expand the definition of domestic abuse to cover situations where an abuser involuntarily shares an explicit picture of a victim. Thursday's signing ceremony took place at the State Crime Lab in Anchorage. Well, the MV Tustamina resumed service today after pausing its schedule last month due to critical staffing issues, KMXD's Dylan Stamard reports.
The MV Tustamina had been in service for less than 2 weeks when it docked in Homer on July 26th. According to an Alaska Department of Transportation press release, the Alaska Marine Highway System ferry had operated with more or less the same crew since it started its 2022 schedule earlier that month. Kodiak Republican House Speaker Louise Stutes says that there were not enough replacement crew available to operate the ferry.
Certainly, like everybody else, they're feeling an employee pinch. But in my conversations with the commissioner of DOT, he actually had said to me that they were going to be able to staff up the Tustamina, but the problem is COVID.
The Tustamina is presently slated to resume regular service August 2nd, departing from Homer and bound for ports around southwest Alaska. The Alaska Marine Highway System has been struggling to hire new staff this year, even with $5,000 hiring bonuses. Stute says that irregular service makes it harder to attract candidates.
When you don't know if you're going to be working from week to week, and you have a family to feed, it makes it pretty tough.
The Tustamina entered a refit and maintenance period last December to extend its nearly 60-year service life even further. The Alaska Department of Transportation is planning to replace the ferry in 2027. Stutes says that the Department of Transportation commissioner has told her that the staffing shortage shouldn't result in further cancellations for ferries this season. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
In East Anchorage, a workshop filled with state-of-the-art machines hums with the sound of 3D printers and their teenage operators. At this summer camp, Alaska Native students reproduce their ancestors' ancient designs. In the process, they learn the sorts of things rarely covered in high school history, Native heritage, technology, and a sense of place. Reporter Stephen Lezak takes us there.
Benjamin Schleifman instructs a group of six Alaska Native high school students as they carefully draw lines onto a large block of wood.
So even though we're not relying on Western tools, we are going to use them when appropriate. And my speed square has gone missing.
Schleifman is Tlingit and Jewish and has worked as an artist and educator for 2 decades. He's teaching the group how to carve a scale model of a traditional Haida canoe. Once the lines are drawn, freshman student Mangan Jimmy learns to saw.
Just keep going like this?
Mm-hmm. For the time being. Once you get the groove started, you can then go forward. So an American-style saw like this cuts forward.
Mangan is one of 7 high school students at this 3-week camp, part of a larger summer program organized by the Cook Inlet Tribal Council, a nonprofit that serves Native communities across the south-central region. Participation is free and open to all Alaska Native and American Indian students. The camp is in its 5th summer. This week's theme is Indigenous Water Technologies.
Isaiah, would you bring your template over here, the extra paper?
At first, it looks like your average high school woodshop, but a few things stand out. rolled up like a tall carpet, a moose hide leans against a wall. A small box on a table holds a collection of walrus ivory scraps. Nearby, another instructor, Brian Walker, who is Inupiaq and Athabascan, enters information on a computer monitor attached to a large humming machine, a laser cutter.
As you can see here on the screen, we have a laser-cut kayak model. This is, I think, the Bering Straits model with the hole in the front, a larger hole in the front.
The machines make for a stark contrast alongside the traditional tools and materials. Before the students began carving their canoe, they assembled 3D models from pieces of wood laser-cut on these machines. Walker explains how the modern tools complement the traditional knowledge of Alaska Native people.
We use these machines not to try and test the technology and knowledge that we had as Indigenous people before contact, but rather showing them the ingenuity that we are as Indigenous people, what we have and what we've developed, and taking it into a whole new kind of field and working with the students on just bringing them their culture, their material culture, their knowledge and their identity all in one. So it's amazing, really.
A student uses a Dremel tool to carefully carve a piece of ivory. She's wearing a pair of heart-shaped earrings she carved the day before. When the day begins to wrap up, the students gather for a sharing circle. Benjamin Schleifman, their teacher, emphasizes that the instruction today will help these cultural practices thrive into the future.
It's our hope that the knowledge that you guys are gaining here and elsewhere, you will take and evolve it and grow it so that your children and your children's children can do the same thing. So, taking the time and doing things right and getting consistent is so important to preserving and revitalizing our cultures, our way of knowing, our sciences. So, thank you. You're doing great.
A few minutes later, the students trickle home with family and friends. The tools are all put away, but some of the laser cutters and 3D printers keep humming into the night, getting ready for the next day's work. In Anchorage, I'm Stephen Lezak.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
A former state ferry laid up in Ketchikan has some new residents, refugees from the war in Ukraine. KRBD's Eric Stone went on board to meet some of them and has this report.
Before Russia invaded Ukraine, 29-year-old Mikita Zakharchenko spent half a decade working on ships.
I worked in Europe. It's Mediterranean Sea, North Sea, England also. Yeah, we work in the big container ships.
Now he's spending his days on another ship, the MV Malaspina. The former Alaska Marine Highway mainliner is undergoing a transformation. It was purchased earlier this year by the owners of the Mill at Ward Cove. That's a private cruise ship terminal operating out of Ketchikan's old pulp mill. Zakharchenko and three other refugees are working to turn the Malaspina into a museum and maritime training center and housing for the cruise terminal's seasonal employees. 16 people are living aboard, including the four refugees and a dozen employees of the cruise terminal. By day, Zakharchenko works on restoring the boat. In the evenings, you're likely to find him at the Malaspina's bar, playing foosball, watching TV, or enjoying a home-cooked meal with the shipmates. He comes to Ketchikan from the Ukrainian port city of Mariupol. He says the city had grown tense since Russia's annexation of nearby Crimea in 2014. Then, this spring, tanks and troops started pouring over Ukraine's borders with Russia and Belarus. He says he knew it wouldn't be long before the fighting arrived at his doorstep.
It started from the 24th of February. We think it's full-out war, and we need to find some safe place.
He fled to the western part of the country and started volunteering. He stayed in Ukraine for another 2 weeks before he was granted permission to leave for Germany in mid-March. But his parents remained in Mariupol as the Russian army laid siege to the city. For 2 weeks, he was left to wonder whether his parents were alive or dead as his hometown crumbled under relentless Russian artillery fire. And then...
I received a call from my father. I'm crying, yeah, because I'm happy and I'm crying.
They had escaped Mariupol, taking 3 days to reach central Ukraine on roads riddled with landmines. Today, Zakharchenko says they're safe in Germany. Meanwhile, Zakharchenko and his high school sweetheart and partner of 13 years made their way to Anchorage through the Uniting for Ukraine program. That's a program that allows Ukrainian refugees to stay in America for up to 2 years if they have a sponsor. That's when longtime Alaska tourism businessman John Binkley says he got a call from his son, who was working with volunteers in Anchorage to find places to resettle refugees fleeing the war.
And we said, bring them to Ketchikan. We've got the perfect spot for them here. We'll take care of them. And we have the perfect situation, the MV Malaspina.
They arrived in early June. Binkley says he's not paying the refugees. He says he's not allowed to until they're issued a social security number. But he's covering all their expenses. They have an account at the local supermarket, access to a car, and the use of numerous toys at the cruise terminal, like kayaks, e-bikes, and sea cycles.
And they've been phenomenal. People, just wonderful human beings, hardworking. They have purpose here now, and we've just come to love them and appreciate them, and we feel humbled to help in some small way.
16-year-old Sofia Zagrabelska is living aboard the Malaspina with her mother. It's the second time the pair has uprooted their lives fleeing the war. They had lived near the eastern Ukrainian city of Donetsk until war broke out with Russian-backed separatists in 2014. They fled to Kharkiv. But then they were forced to relocate again this spring when Russian troops started bombing and shelling their new home. Zagrabelska is a little self-conscious about her English, but she works up the courage to tell me that she's just glad to be away from the fighting.
I'm very happy to be in USA because in USA I be in safe zone. I'm very happy I don't listen sound bomb. And I sleep in bed, not in, under floor.
As for Zakharchenko, he says he's still getting used to the rain here in Ketchikan, but he loves the scenery.
Oh, it's a very beautiful place. I never see it before. The view like here, yeah, it's amazing looking.
He says if the government allows it, he could see himself staying in Ketchikan for quite a while.
Everything is going good. I like this place. I like people who around me, who support me. I find new friends here.
He's glad to be safe, but at the same time, he yearns for home. For now, a berth on the Malaspina will have to do. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Biologists say Alaska's known population of Aleutian terns has declined more than 90% since 1960. Now, a group of scientists is working on a statewide count to make sure they aren't overestimating the decline. KTOO's Claire Strempel reports.
If researchers are right, this is the fastest decline of any seabird species in Alaska. And it's all the more serious because there just aren't that many Aleutian terns here to begin with.
It certainly feels like we are watching the species slowly disappear.
Heather Renner has been a biologist at Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge for about 2 decades.
The seabird group had been kind of hearing stories of declines in Aleutian terns as long as I've worked here. Really, the problem has been that nobody's been studying them.
There are an estimated 30,000 Aleutian terns worldwide, but Renner's research showed only about 5,000 of the birds nest in the state. That prompted a collective effort to understand and conserve them. Studying a migratory bird in a place as big as Alaska is not easy. Aleutian terns spend only 3 to 4 months a year here. Their range includes the whole coast of Alaska and extends nearly 10,000 miles to places like Indonesia, the Philippines, and Borneo.
Aleutian terns are notoriously hard to study because they nest in pretty small colonies and they're not very clustered. We also know that they tend to move around, so our little short-term snapshots are challenging to interpret.
The same characteristics that make them hard to study make them a sought-after find for birders and outdoor enthusiasts.
Aleutian terns are a really special bird that not everybody gets to see. They're not well-known to many Alaskan birders because many of the colonies are off of the road system.
They have silver-gray bodies and a black head like Arctic terns. But Aleutian terns have a distinctive white patch on the forehead. They feed by plunge diving into the sea. It isn't unusual anymore for a bird species population to crash. One study says that the entire bird population in North America has declined by about a third since the 1970s. Renner says biologists don't know what's causing the Aleutian Tern's precipitous decline.
The challenge is that we don't have a local threat that's known, a single thing that we can fix. My best guess is that it's related to something in the marine environment.
One study pinned a die-off of Arctic terns to algal toxins that get to terns through the fish in their diet. But Renner says even though Aleutian terns also eat those fish, it's hard for her to imagine that could account for such broad-scale, range-wide declines over several decades. Yakutat has the largest known breeding colony of Aleutian terns in the state, at Black Sand Spit. Less than 10 years ago, there were up to 2,000 birds at the site.
And then the last couple of years, it's been only several hundred.
Susan Ohlers is a biologist for the U.S. Forest Service there. She says there's a lot of variability in the yearly population count, even at what's considered a stable nesting area. That number has dropped into the hundreds before. She says when numbers drop, it could mean that some of the birds are nesting elsewhere. But the dramatic downward trend has spurred action among bird biologists statewide. The working group has members from several different state and federal agencies. They're doing direct counts, but also using tools like drones and song meters
to really get a handle on that number and, you know, validate and provide additional information from that 2015 paper.
They plan to have a solid population estimate in the next couple of years. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
The last member of the Alaska Zoo's resident wolf pack has died at the age of 16. Windy was a gray female who came to the zoo in Anchorage in 2006, one of a half dozen pups the Alaska Department of Fish and Game took from a predator control zone where wolves were being hunted and trapped. Here's Alaska Zoo Director Pat Lampe.
They were wonderful animals. I would say they were the best ambassadors of species that we've ever had here at the zoo.
Lampe says zoo staff would walk the wolves every day on a service road and introduce them to visitors, and the wolves were part of an education program. He figures over the years about 3 million people had a chance to experience and learn about wolves. Lampe says Windy lived longer than a wolf in the wild, which has a life expectancy somewhere between 5 and 10 years. He says Windy played a key role in educating people about wolves.
We were able to dispel a lot of the myths and false information that has been, you know, put out about wolves over generations, so people could learn about them, see them, understand, you know, more about them and gain appreciation for the wild counterparts.
The howling of wolves won't be heard at the zoo for the foreseeable future, but Lampe says if an opportunity comes along to again have wolves there, the zoo will look into it. That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin and Stephen Lezak in Anchorage, Dylan Samard in Kodiak, Claire Strempel in Juneau, and Eric Stone in Ketchikan. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.